to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live, you see, tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number and taken away your name.
I have really had a great life so far. I'm only 30 years old, but I don't think there's anyone out there that I would trade places with. Only because, not that I'm the richest guy in the world, but only because I have lived a life and pursued my dreams. Hosting this radio show has opened up so many opportunities for me. I get to travel a lot, and you just heard Secret Agent Man. I was in Chattanooga for an event a couple of years ago, and staying next to me in the hotel room right next to mine was none other than Johnny Rivers. And you know I'm a big oldies fan. And so that was certainly a treat. I mean, what are the odds, right? I have met a lot of people as a result of this radio program, accomplished quite a bit. Never had a fantasy, really, that hasn't been fulfilled. Not all of them happened on the air, of course, but nevertheless, it's going to be hard. Where do I go from here? But I'll tell you, it's always fun to look back. And we're going to do something at the top of this hour. Welcome back to the show, by the way. James Edwards here. Going to do something we don't typically do right now, just to prove how great our show has been. I want to revisit the broadcast archives just for a moment here and play for you a very special interview as we kick off this second hour. Much more to come in the show tonight, but I want to go to the archives just for a moment as we relive together one of the cesspool's greatest moments.
Pat, we love you, and thank you for spending a few minutes with us today.
Well, thank you for giving me the time, folks.
Yeah, anytime. It's always an honor. And, well, you've done it again, my friend. Another book, another runaway bestseller, but this one is perhaps your most provocative work to date. Tell me, Pat, what compelled you to write Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War?
Well, there were a number of things. One is, it is a phenomenal story. What happened to the Western civilization that ruled the entire world in 1914, and 30 years later, all of Europe was in ashes or aflame, and communists had half of Europe, and all the great Western empires had been destroyed. And so I went back to try to locate the historic blunders that were made, and I think we located eight of them. So it was a great story in the first place. Secondly, it's a cautionary tale for the United States. The arrogance you see, the hubris of these folks, the monarchs and all their retainers, just before World War One, we can see emulated today, copied today, frankly, by some folks in the post-Cold War America. So it was to try to tell a cautionary tale to prevent what happening to us, what happened to Great Britain and the British Empire.
Well, with that being said, that is a perfect segue to my next question. What are the parallels between the United Kingdom of the interwar years, those being the years between World War I and World War II, and the United States of America today?
Well, one of the greatest is the British decisions to alienate old allies like Japan, which had been a loyal ally in World War One. The Brits broke the treaty with them on the demand of the United States for no good reason whatsoever. And Japan was sort of driven into isolation and anger and rage, and eventually returned to her own imperial policy and collided with Great Britain. Italy, even under Mussolini, who loathed Hitler, was driven into Hitler's arms by the British-French decision to sanction Italy over a colonial war in Ethiopia, which was a mistake. They should have focused on Germany. And finally, you get this war guarantee that the British gave to Poland unsolicited, even though Poland had participated in the rape of Czechoslovakia. At least the regime had. And so all of these decisions, you see them replicated in the United States now, handing out war guarantees to the Baltic republics, to Ukraine, and Georgia if McCain is elected. So I just see the same pattern repeating itself again and again. And I do believe the gentleman who said we do not, you know, people really do not learn from history was right.
Well, you know, Pat, you've offered so many great books, and I've got all of them. Every time you set to write a book, you can guarantee yourself on one sale, and that's right here in Memphis. But out of all your books, I really appreciated A Republic, Not an Empire as much as any of them. And you addressed this issue in one of the chapters in that book. And in this book, you expound upon that and certainly skewer the myth of Winston Churchill. What are some of the mistakes or myths, if you will, that hold up Churchill as a hero among many Americans, especially the neoconservatives?
Well, there's no question that Winston Churchill was a heroic figure in 1940 when he took over the premiership in Great Britain just as the Germans were breaking through in the Ardennes. He defied Hitler, he defied the Germans, he fought on, he inspired his people, he was the leader during the Battle of Britain. And Americans watched that from across the ocean, and there was an indelible impression that here was the defiant bulldog who represented the British people at their best. That's a true story. That's not just myth. However, there's another Churchill who in 1942, 43, 44 is slipping into Moscow, dividing Europe with Stalin. I mean, groveling to Stalin in a way that would make Neville Chamberlain look like Davy Crockett, writing off the Poles for whom the British had gone to war. And then you go back all the way to the early to 1913 and 1914. He lusted for war far more than the Kaiser, who was trying to avoid war.
That's right.
And these are all myths that we've been raised on as kids. And so this is one reason I wrote the book, at least the new generation coming up, that is not sort of, if you will, saturated or marinated in these myths, can understand how it was our grandfathers and fathers destroyed Western civilization.
Excellent answer. Very well put. And as with any Buchanan book, this one has received a great deal of fanfare, much critical acclaim, and a few inevitable attacks. What is it, Pat, about World War II that your detractors don't seem to understand?
I think there is an idea, and it's come, frankly, from some. And the book is dedicated to four of my uncles who were Greatest Generation Americans and fought in Europe, one of whom came back from Anzio with a Silver Star. I think it's the idea that this was a good war. This was a war where good, pure good fought pure evil, which a war that had to be fought and was necessary. And there are no doubts and qualms about it. But that is not true, as I write, and that's why you, in effect, are dispelling some of the great myths by which Americans live. When you say that Winston Churchill blundered. Chamberlain and Churchill blundered serially again and again.
All right, we're going to hold it up.
A war with Germany.
We're going to hold it up right there, ladies and gentlemen. I got my producer pushing pause on that interview. A great one. One of the classics in the Political Cesspool archives. And our archives are littered with great interviews just like this one that you're listening to now. My most recent interview with Pat Buchanan. We're going to continue it on the flip side of this commercial break, and then we're going to get back into more live programming tonight on the Political Cesspool. Stay tuned.
Coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show. Saturday night, January 15th, James Edwards here with you from AM 1380 WLRM Studios this evening in Memphis, Tennessee. Broadcasting to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network as well. I had an all-new live interview with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts during tonight's first hour. In fact, we are overbooked with guests for the entire month of January. Coming up next week, all-new live interviews with Mark Weber, Gordon Baum, Ted Pike. Later in the month, Jared Taylor is back, as is Kevin McDonald, and Craig Boddicker, Brother Nathaniel Kapner, Bob Whitaker. Busy, busy couple of weeks forthcoming here in the Political Cesspool. But what we're doing right now is something we don't typically do, and that's play a segment from the archives. It's still the dawn of a new year, and we're looking back on one of the greatest moments in the political cesspool's history, with so many great moments still to come as this year unfolds. Now back to the archives. Pat Buchanan, always good enough to make a stop here with us each time he releases a book, and this was our most recent chat with him.
I mean, Winston Churchill blundered. Chamberlain and Churchill blundered serially again and again about a war with Germany. Hitler didn't want war with the West. He didn't want war with Poland. He didn't want a world war. He wasn't even prepared for a world war.
Mm-hmm.
To say that he was a thug and a brutal dictator and a bully and someone who used threats of violence and force as tools of diplomacy is correct. To say that he did horrible things in wartime is correct. But as I say, had there been no war, there would have been no Holocaust. And I'm not sure there would have been a war if the British hadn't issued this insane war guarantee.
Well, you know, history is, Pat, kind of like a Sunday buffet. People seemingly take what they want and leave the rest on the table. And, of course, it's been lost to antiquity, the fact that the vast majority of Americans stood with Charles A. Lindbergh and the America First Committee in opposition to our entry into World War II before the attack, of course, on Pearl Harbor.
Well, good for you. Good for you in bringing up Colonel Lindbergh's name, because his reputation has been blackened because of a single speech he gave and a couple of paragraphs in it where he said that, there are three forces that are moving for war, and one of them is, of course, the Roosevelt administration. The other is the British, which was clearly true. They had the man called Intrepid, William Stevenson, trying to find ways to get the Americans into war, putting up propaganda, frankly, blackmailing senators and everything. And then he said the Jewish community is beating the drums for war, but this is going to be a disaster for the Jewish community if we get into war. And, of course, that was verboten to say, but frankly, no one has said what he said was, palpably untrue. And these folks, and before December 7, 1941, the America First Committee offered, they said, look, let's put up a resolution in Congress saying we declare war on Germany and have it voted up or down, but don't sneak us by a back door into war. And because their son, their fathers and uncles had fought and bled and died in World War I, only to make the world safe for democracy, only to see the British Empire annex another million square miles.
And we're certainly following in their footsteps with regards to the collapse of what was truly the greatest nation in the history of civilization, these United States of America. But you mentioned propaganda. Had divine providence seen fit for Pearl Harbor to have never occurred, let's say the United States stays home and Germany proceeds to defeat Stalin, what would America have looked like in 2008, Pat? Would Hitler have come over here, liquidated Christianity, holocausted our people, or would perhaps the world have been a better place had we abstained?
Well, you can't know, by then, when you're talking about 1941, Hitler did not want war in the West. That's why he didn't demand the return of Alsace-Lorraine from France, where he did want the return of Danzig from Poland or from the League of Nations. And he did not want war with Britain, never did. He wanted to see the British Empire preserved. He was a great admirer of it. He thought Britain was a natural ally of Germany because they had no conflicts. And so I think if the British hadn't given the war guarantee, I don't know that there would even have been a war with Poland, because the German offer was not outrageous for return political control of their city, Danzig, with the Poles having economic control. And I don't know if there would even have been a war with the Soviet Union then, for the reason that Germany would not have had a border with the Soviet Union. They would have had to get permission from Romania or from Poland, or from Hungary, even to invade the Soviet Union. So I don't know that it would have been a war. If, however, Hitler had not declared war in the United States, I think he would have been stopped in Russia. The Russians had stopped him clearly by 1940, but it might have, the outcome of that war would have been in doubt, because I think it was American Lend-Lease and all the equipment we gave to Stalin which enabled him to really sustain his war effort and mount that enormous offensive the Russians had coming into Europe.
Right.
I do think if you had not gotten into the war by 1943, Stalin would probably have been on the Rhine, not just the Elbe.
Well, that's very interesting, and it could have been, but certainly a lot of American blood would have been spared, and I think that's what we all would have wanted.
Right. Well, it was a wonderful thing the America First people did, and I was criticized for it. But in the America First folks kept us out of war until after Hitler made his fatal blunder of invading Russia, which meant that the Russians bore the burden of battle, as they rightly should have, as Stalin's regime certainly should have, because they were partners of Hitler. And Americans, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of American soldiers, lived who would not have lived if we had had to fight Germany from the West and without the Soviet Union in the war.
Well, Pat, you're certainly a student of history. I like to read as much as I can. I certainly wouldn't compare my intellectual prowess to yours, but if we could survive General Sherman, we could have survived Hitler, I think. But let me ask you this. How did you go about researching for this book? This is yet another typically well-researched Pat Buchanan book. Who did you primarily consult with and reference when writing this?
Well, what I did was, after I did A Republic, Not an Empire, I got that good letter from George Kennan, the great geostrategist of the Cold War, who agreed with me on a point I'd been really torn apart for, which was when I said, look, if once after the Battle of Britain, if the Germans couldn't get air superiority over the British Isles, they certainly couldn't get it over the Atlantic, and if they couldn't land in England, they're not going to land in the United States. It's preposterous. There was no threat. And I was attacked for that. And I sort of determined, I said, at some point I'm going to expand on this argument because I think it's true. And so, well, you know, I started reading more and more books, and I was going to write a book on the war guarantee. And then you go back and say, well, how did we get to there? And you keep going back, and I had to sort of cut it off in 1905. But I've got about 120 books, histories, biographies, Churchill. I must quote six of Churchill's books, mm-hmm. six of Andrew Roberts' books. He's a friend of mine, a historian in Britain. And you just keep reading them, and what you do is you decide, here's the six key decisions and pivot points that decided the history of the century. One of them, of course, is just before the 6 weeks between Sarajevo, the assassination of the Archduke in World War One. You get Versailles, another. And I decided that the British breaking their treaty with Japan was another, at the Washington Naval Conference. And then I discovered that Mussolini despised Hitler, loathed him, wanted an alliance with the West. So you did the stress affront, then the familiar ones, Rhineland, Anschluss, Munich. But the key one is the war guarantee. And that's the soul of the book. And I would, if people can only read one chapter, read that, because it shows how leaders in panic and haste and folly, who have been knocked on their heels by being humiliated, can make a horrendous decision which costs them everything, for everything, the whole British Empire and the British nation as one of the first ranked of nations. That was put on the line in an insane war guarantee that the British could not honor and did not honor.
All right, let's hold up right there. Great place to pause this classic interview with Pat Buchanan. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to hear the conclusion of my talk with Pat back from 2008. He's writing a new book, by the way. I have it on good authority. He mentions it actually in this interview, but I have all new information about his next book. We'll talk about it right after this.
To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Winston Smith will be joining me during tonight's third hour. We've got Pastor Weaver coming on the show later on. But first, let's finish up this interview with Pat Buchanan. It's almost over. It's one of our best. Here it is.
And if people want to know more, they're going to have to go out and buy the book, right, Pat?
Yes, sir.
Well, that
buy it and take it to the beach on July 4th.
There you go, and buy a couple of copies for your friends. And that book is, of course, Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War, How Britain Lost Its Empire and the West Lost the World. It is a runaway bestseller on the charts right now, authored by our good friend Pat Buchanan. Mr. Buchanan, thank you so much for coming back on our program, for fighting for our people. And last question, What can your fans expect to see from Pat Buchanan for the next 20 to 30 years?
Well, I don't know how long we're all going to last, to be very honest. I hope so. I hope to write, I've got one book in mind. I'm not sure I'm going to do it. One book in mind, which is, I think that, and it would be not a large book, but it's sort of the, it's not Death of the West, but it's sort of the coming world where I think issues of race and ethnicity and culture, the wars of race, ethnicity, and culture are going to replace the old wars, if you will, of ideology and dynasty and empire. And I see that coming, and it's not a pleasant sight, but Pat Moynihan sort of saw it coming, so did Dr. Schlesinger. And I've read a number of columns on this, and you see the divisions in our society increasingly along the lines of race and ethnicity. And I don't think it's a pleasant prospect that our kids and grandkids confront. And I'm going to try to address it and see if there's any ways that it can be resolved, sort of short of some sort of balkanization of America.
More to come from Pat Buchanan. Stay tuned. And again, Mr. Buchanan, thank you for your service, for your generosity in appearing with us. I turned 28 years old this week. You've made my birthday quite memorable, and we thank you for that.
I can remember when I was 28. You know what I was doing?
What's that?
I was flying around the country with Richard Nixon into just this period in 1966, trying to elect Republicans after the Goldwater disaster, and we succeeded, elected 47 of them.
So in other words, your 28th year on Earth was a hell of a lot more productive than mine. Thanks again.
I don't know about that.
Thanks again, my friend, and God bless you.
Well, God bless you. Bye-bye.
There's Pat Buchanan, the one and only, and like I said, he always takes the time out of his schedule to visit with us here in the Political Cesspool each time he releases a book. Got a new book coming out. He just mentioned it there on that interview, and I believe it is very close to being published, his book on the possibility of a coming race war. That is Pat's next book. Stay tuned. Now, that was something from the broadcast archives. Originally scheduled for this week, we had, in addition to Paul Craig Roberts, Bill Johnson, the chairman of the American Third Position. But then I was thinking to myself, why just feature the chairman of the party when we could bring in each and every member of the American Third Position Board of Directors? That includes myself, Bill, Don Wassel, Kevin McDonald, and Tom Sunick. Well, with Tom Sunick living in Europe and four other schedules to juggle there, I thought it might be difficult to have all five of us in the same place at the same time. So what we did was we got together earlier this week for a roundtable panel discussion, and we had it moderated by a female accomplice. We taped it for this radio program, and here it is now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the State of the A3P 2011 Director's Address. The American Third Position was launched at the beginning of 2010 with the vision of restoring liberty, sovereignty, and identity to authentic Americans. And now it's 2011, and the party is celebrating its first anniversary. Here today to talk about the American Third Position are the A3P Board of Directors. I'm going to give a very brief introduction of these gentlemen in alphabetical order. Our first director is the host of the South's foremost populist radio program, The Political Cesspool. He's also the author of a recent book titled Racism, Schmacism, Mr. James Edwards. Hello, James.
Hello, Jane. It's great to be here with you today.
Next is the chairman of the A3P. He is an international corporate lawyer, and he has been involved with patriot politics for many years, Mr. William Johnson. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Jane.
The next director is a professor of psychology at California State University. He is the author of numerous books and articles, the best known of which is his book, The Culture of Critique. He is also the editor of the Occidental Quarterly Print Magazine and the Occidental Observer weblog, Dr. Kevin McDonald. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, it's great to be here.
The next director is a former professor of political science and former Croatian diplomat. He hosts the Sunik Journal on Voice of Reason Radio Network. He has written many books and articles in various languages, and his most recent book is titled Postmortem Report, Cultural Examinations from Postmodernity, Dr. Tom Sunick. Hello, Tom.
Good evening, and thank you for your invitation.
Our next director has also been involved with patriot politics for many years. He is the founder of the American Nationalist Union, the editor of the Nationalist Times News Magazine, and also the editor of the website castfootball.us, Mr. Don Wassel. Hello, Don.
Hi, Jane. Nice to be with you today.
My name is Jane Grabery, and I'll be hosting today's discussion. And let me start by saying it's an honor to be in the company of so many talented and dedicated men who have worked so hard to promote the best interests of our people. Now, some of our listeners may not be familiar with the A3P, so let's start off with a very basic question. What is the A3P, Bill?
The A3P is a new political party, the American Third Position, that was founded, as you mentioned in the introduction, just 1 year ago today. And it takes positions that are strikingly different from the major political parties of today, but are also similar to them in many respects. We have looked at every issue out there, and we've taken a position that we believe is appropriate and proper for the future of our people in America. We're neither left nor right, liberal or conservative, Republican or Democrat. We're truly the third position, and we're finding that we are hitting a note among the young people today because they are so disenchanted with America and American politics, and they see not a bright future for their generation as our parents and as we saw for ours. So the American Third Position is taking a new approach to a political system that we hope will gain more widespread approach among people who no longer trust the entrenched establishment.
Thank you, Bill. Now, before the A3P was founded, there were already a number of groups that promote the interests of white Americans. How is the A3P different from those other orgs, James?
Well, first of all, Jane, I want to be clear that we're not in competition with any other existing group. There are many fine groups which have been standing up for white people for a long, long time, and there's lots of crossover with myself and the other A3P directors between these other organizations. But I believe that the biggest distinction between the American Third Position and other pro-white groups is that the A3P is structured as a political party. This is what I think makes us so unique and so special and so important. The A3P is designed to have candidates run for office. This is what sets us apart. Our goal is that in the not-too-distant future, Americans will be able to go to the polls, look at their ballots, and see the name of an A3P candidate listed as an alternative to the Democrat and Republican candidates. And another thing that distinguishes the A3P is that public activism is at the heart of our strategy. The backbone of the A3P is the young men and women, and some of them not so young, who go out there, go out into the public, and spread our message to everyday Americans.
Thank you, James. Well, those listeners who have had an opportunity to visit the American Third Position website and read through our program know that the A3P takes a protectionist stance. We believe in protecting American jobs and reducing or eliminating foreign aid and involvement in foreign affairs. What do you think is the most important issue when it comes to protecting the American people? Kevin?
I think the most important issue that we face as a country and actually throughout the West is immigration. And that's the force that is changing our country so rapidly, that is making us a minority, that is taking away the societies that we all grew up in. So I think we have to deal with immigration, both legal and illegal. And I think that is one of the most, you know, that's something that resonates with a huge number of our people at this point.
And this is Bill Johnson. To add to that, I think that immigration issues is a very important aspect of a larger, broader picture. For the last 50 or 60 years, we've been promoting a myriad of policies that I guess you would call dysgenics.
All right, let's hold it up right there, ladies and gentlemen. Doing a lot of tape stuff today. Or at least this hour, the third hour, Winston Smith's going to be on. We're going to have Pastor John Weaver. But we taped this audio address earlier in this week, and I wanted to share it with you tonight, a lot of our friends, and we will continue it in this next segment before we head into the third hour.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return. We'll return!
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. It's an unorthodox second hour, playing a little archived reel with Pat Buchanan, and now a taped interview that I participated in earlier this week with the other members of the American Third Position Board of Directors. Now, we're not going to have time to finish playing this tape before the end of this hour, and when we go into the third hour, it's going to be 100% live. Winston will be joining me. We got another guest to get to this evening. So we're going to play as much of this as we can, and then I'll refer you to their website where you can pick up the conclusion, of course, after we're done tonight. But let's go back to the tape.
For the last 50 or 60 years, we've been promoting a myriad of policies that I guess you would call dysgenics. And we need to move away from those policies, whether it is through immigration, through postponing marriage among our people and having kids and raising them in a good moral society, of providing subsidies, Section 8 housing subsidies or other subsidies to people that and tax breaks for people that should not be expanding the population but should be contracting it and hurting through taxes and things like that the people that should be expanding our nation and having the children. So stopping immigration, both legal and illegal, that is changing the face of the country is an important aspect of our policies, and also we want to stop the dysgenics that has taken place.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Another thing which is of concern to our members and should be of concern to all Americans is the Federal Reserve. Would you address that, Tom?
Oh, yes, I can try. Like, the A3P must address, of course, the, if I can put it that way, the bank fraudsters and the so-called myth of the invisible hand. And in my view, we have to take a more critical stance towards what's going on now with the economy in the United States of America, or for that matter, in the West. Let me just put it somewhat graphically. I think we should take a very critical stance towards the Fed and how actually the banks in the States, they're very quick when it comes to privatizing the profits, but they're also very quick in terms of passing out the debts to our kinsmen, to our citizens. And I think we need to take a very critical issue towards that, because what's going on right now in the States, it's not good at all.
Now, the A3P was founded 1 year ago. What has been accomplished during 2010? Don?
The American Third Position was very active in 2010. Over 24 events were held around the country in which members went out in public to distribute A3P literature to the people, American people, and distributed many thousands of flyers, in fact. There were also member get-togethers, including several picnics and other social events, as well as a number of formal meetings to discuss party business in various states and localities. Members of the American Third Position Pennsylvania chapter went out as a group to challenge an effort by the NAACP to reduce the number of white teachers in the Wilkes-Barre School District in northeastern Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania and New Jersey chapters hosted an evening with white rights activists Paul Fromm and Lewis March. And we also held our first national conference in June in Southern California, which featured talks by three of the A3P directors about the challenges facing America. The A3P is now formally incorporated in 4 states. It's been recognized by the California Secretary of State as pursuing ballot access for the 2012 elections. And a big success and achievement was that the A3P backed Harry Bertram, a longtime friend of mine, as a candidate for the school board in Mongalia County, West Virginia, which is in northern West Virginia near Morgantown. And A3P sent representatives to West Virginia to campaign alongside Harry. A3P members throughout the U.S. volunteered for a phone bank to call registered voters throughout the county and let them know why Harry was the best candidate, and Harry ended up getting 14% of the vote, which was quite impressive. And as far as membership, it grew steadily all through the year, the first year of the A3P, which was this past year, and we now have over 300 members, which is about one per day. So we're very happy with what's been accomplished, and we're looking forward to 2011 and really expanding our membership and our activism and our reach to middle America.
And I want to add to what Don Wassel said. In addition, we have had a lot of lobbying efforts among the very high echelon of American politics. Kevin McDonald and I and some others met with a presidential contender who is running for president this year, and we lobbied American 3P positions with him. This was Governor Johnson, Gary Johnson, who's running for president. He was governor of New Mexico. We presented our views to him. It was a cordial, proper discussion, and although he doesn't think like we do in many respects, he met with us and we discussed our views for a couple of hours. The next week, I'm going to go meet with in Washington, D.C. to meet with a different presidential candidate and a U.S. senator to discuss these issues. So we are seeing progress. People are meeting with us, talking with us as never before. And I think 2011, if each of these members will join and become activists, we will be a power to be reckoned with, and our views, we can put them forth to the general public, and they will accept them.
Well, it's very exciting, Bill. Thank you very much. We've had a lot of progress, but there are still some people who think that in an aspiring political party's first year, instead of hundreds of members, we should have attracted thousands or tens of thousands of members, or that we should have backed numerous candidates for public office, or gotten on the ballot in every state, or even that we should have someone in Congress by now. How do you respond to that, Kevin?
Well, certainly the progress we have made is very heartening. But the fact is that people who come out publicly in favor of the A3P certainly have huge risks that they had to think about. They risk their social standing, their livelihoods, even their families are at risk. They even face the possibility of physical violence, and that has actually happened out here in Southern California when we have had public demonstrations. So considering how much danger there's involved and how much people stand to lose, it's very encouraging that we have had so many people join up and actually come out and identify themselves as members of the party. And it's encouraging that we've had candidates for public office and these events that Don talked about. The fact is that we still face a big uphill problem of publicly coming out as white. It's just there's this big stigma. It's certainly the big media activist organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center are there to pounce on anybody who comes out because they know that this is something that props up the current multicultural way of doing things, and they are terrified that there will be a powerful group of people there who are well educated, well informed, that will actually take a position where being white is okay, where it's something that we have rights and interests that we should be pursuing. So we're not saying that that people should take huge hits by joining us. If you are going to lose your job, you certainly wouldn't want to do that. But there are a lot of people who could withstand this risk, who can come out and actually actively be for it. And actually, quite a one big opportunity there are these. Are events where there are quite a few white people already there. People are sort of implicitly white. That is, these are groups of people who are predominantly white. The overwhelming majority are white. They're brought together by common interests, and these people are certainly much more open to our point of view. For instance, our Pennsylvania and various other groups have distributed flyers at the Celtic Highland Games, which a festival with the German Cultural Society at a Greek festival. These are the kind of groups that are sort of naturally inclined to our point of view. I think this is a great place to go. Instead of just going out in the public where you're going to get a lot of hostility, to go to these groups that are sort of naturally prone and sympathetic to our point of view, I think is a great strategy. And the fact is that once we start making progress, once it starts to people start seeing that it's okay, that there are some intelligent people out there who are well-educated, who are doing this kind of stuff, people are going to join. It's going to snowball, and the progress could be very, very rapid. We could see it could just be exponential, it grows very, very rapidly. So that's what I'm looking forward to, and I really do think it's going to happen.
Well, it's clear that we need to overcome the stigma associated with promoting our own ethnic interests and overcome the other challenges of organizing politically as whites. What else do you suggest to help accomplish that, Tom?
Yes, well, let me just briefly address some of those issues, and I would certainly like to make a few suggestions, especially for our younger activists and our A3P members. First and foremost, I cannot overemphasize the paramount importance of cultural wars.
Folks, unfortunately, we're going to have to...
Ladies
and gentlemen, we're going to have to take a break right there. We're coming up on the bottom of the second hour. We didn't get a chance to play that taping all the way through. It was a panel discussion that I participated in earlier this week with the American Third Position Board of Directors. If you want to catch the rest of that in its entirety or just the conclusion, go to the American Third Position website, American3P.org. We will have Bill Johnson on the program. He was originally scheduled for tonight. We moved him to the second or week of February, I believe it was, so we could play that tape and then have him back on for a follow-up. So that's forthcoming, as is our third hour. So stay tuned tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Still much more to come during tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm James Edwards, and I'll be right back.
Hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.